This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the godfather, Nate Milton, joined, as always, by my partner in crime, the one and only Big Nasty. I didn't cry because Ghana lost Cunningham. What's up, my brother?
What's up, Nate? You had to get that in. Okay, I understand.
Hey, I'm saying, people like the royal rant, but, I mean, you did say some anti-American type stuff on rant. And so, you know, we had to bring it to them.
You know, I think it was as American as it gets because I was exercising my right as an American to cheer for whoever I want. So, in essence, I was more of an American by cheering for Ghana than cheering for America. I was just exercising my rights, man.
So did you get some racist comments in your inbox this week?
You know, I haven't checked everything, but I would like to think no. It's been very positive because, as I mentioned on the rant, I was able to block most of anything that I received that was that negative. But you know, I think I'm down to a good core nucleus of friends who would say politically correct things when it came to Ghana and United States. That's a rivalry, by the way. We got a rivalry. It's officially a rivalry with United States finally defeating Ghana in a game that was dominated, let's be honest now, by Ghana's time of possession and shots on goal.
We're not going to get into World Cup analysis this week, but I do have two quick things that I would like to say about the World Cup. Number one, for those that are shocked at the United States success, I got to say, I don't know about you, Alfred, but if you look up and down the roster, there's more brothers on this team than I can remember. Granted, they're like German brothers, they're like Milli Vanilli, but there's more black dudes on this USA team than in any World Cup in the history of World Cups.
So what you're trying to say is it's a very athletic team.
They're athletic, and they're just naturally gifted and athletic and so fast. The other thing,
it's a good team. Yeah, it's a good team. It's a nice little squad.
Yeah. But the other thing I would like to note about the World Cup, and this is something I've been having beef with soccer heads for a minute, and now that this man is injured, we don't delight in people's injury, but I would like to take this moment, this time out, to address this. Cristiano Ronaldo, big story coming out of the World Cup, the USA's next opponent. Cristiano Ronaldo has come up injured. And everybody's like, oh, man, Ronaldo was hurt. Ronaldo was hurt. And I've been telling people for years and more years, Big Nasty, maybe I'm old school, maybe I'm just old, but there's only one Ronaldo in soccer that I recognize, and it ain't this dude Cristiano. Ain't the dude on GQ magazine. Ain't the dude selling deodorant and perfume and cologne and stuff. It's the bald dude from Brazil that looked like Low-Key from wrestling. That's my Ronaldo. That's the only Ronaldo I recognize, man.
Baldo Ronaldo is what you're saying.
Yes, the original, the OG Ronaldo, man. Like, people just, like, toss this dude out. Like, I remember when I was coming up, man, they were like, oh, Ronaldo is the greatest player since Pelé. And I hated how they said Pelé instead of Pelé, like most people in America say it. But it feels like we're doing a royal rant right now.
I like it. But, I like the passion.
Like, I'm like, man, how y'all gonna forget about Ronaldo, man? Because that dude in the 90s, Ronaldo was, for most people, the face of international soccer.
Right.
So, yeah, let's not forget Ronaldo, man, just because we got
a new... It kind of points to Cristiano Ronaldo's greatness if he's able to wipe out an influence like that. Because when you say Ronaldo, let's be honest, like you said, we're thinking Cristiano. And I'll be very interested to see how well USA plays against Portugal. I'm not buying this team yet, but if they beat Portugal, I know Ronaldo may not be at full strength, but you know it'll be a very impressive win.
Yeah, it should be. I'd like to make a quick programming note. The third king, Marcus Vandenberg, not with us right now. He's on CPT, even if it is light-skinned CPT, and that is because he is currently celebrating his two-year anniversary with Yahoo Sports. So shout out to Brother Marcus. He should be joining us later on in the program, but who knows? He may decide to take his fiance out and go and get some crab legs with your boy Jameis Winston and have a nice evening on the town.
Crab legs sound really good about now, especially free crab legs if I'm able to get my hands on some in Shoplift.
I don't think it'll work. You don't have a Heisman. plus, like, you're like super black. Like, Jameis is black, but you're like, you're Prince Akeem black.
I think I could try it out. I'm just kind of plead ignorance. Like, I just got to the country, you know. I do not know.
Well, speaking of people that just got to the country, half of the San Antonio Spurs roster, let's give props to your new NBA champions, your current and reigning NBA champions, the San Antonio Spurs, who went out and straight up mollywopped the Miami Heat. Going into the playoffs, Alfred, I had predicted that the Spurs would win, but I thought it'd be in six, maybe seven. I didn't think it was going to be this easy for San Antonio winning in five games over a Miami Heat team that looked like they got old overnight.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that I'm not surprised, but not only in hindsight, but even looking at this series, the only reason I expected the Heat to be competitive wasn't because of Miami as a team. It was because of LeBron James. I said on the show, I cannot bet against LeBron James. But the fact that he just couldn't carry this depleted roster to a championship win doesn't surprise me too much. The Spurs team on paper was better. The Spurs team, we know about the ball movement and the depth and all that stuff. But when it comes down to it, this is a storyline league, and I just think the main story was LeBron against the San Antonio Spurs. It's a movie we've seen before, and it's a movie that ended almost similar to what we saw this time around with LeBron being swept in when he was with Cleveland. So we saw this time around to where the only game the Heat were able to win was when LeBron had an out-of-body experience and played one of his best career games. And that's saying a lot for a man who's nicknamed the King. But now that he wasn't able to deliver that on a night-in, night-out basis, hell, let's be honest, he wasn't able to deliver that on a quarterly basis, to where after that first quarter in Game 5, he was pooped. And he just didn't have what it took to carry the team. So, yeah, congratulations to the Spurs, but the biggest storyline here is, when is LeBron going to consistently be on a team where him and his supporting cast enjoy an extended prime together? And that may be never.
You know, you look at LeBron, who is, what, is going to be 30 this summer?
Yeah, he's 29 right now, and he's going to be 30.
Yeah, so, I mean, his prime is probably, you're talking 2, 3, 4 years max, you know, before we start to see the decline. And, you know, he had a really solid series. Game 1, 25 points. Game 2, 35 points. Game 3, 22. Game 4, 28. And then in Game 5, 31 points. It just was, you know, Dwayne Wade disappeared. Norris Cole disappeared. Mario Chalmers, poof, be gone. We didn't see anything from the supporting cast. And the Heat, you know, let's do this autopsy on the Miami Heat, because they're the bigger story, unfortunately. You know, instead of the five-time champion San Antonio Spurs, all everyone seems to be talking about, including Pat Riley, who had his little press conference today, was what happened with the Miami Heat. And I think this team cannot win another championship as currently constructed. They've got to get younger. They've got to get faster. Maybe they need to get more international. But this Heat team cannot stand pat. You know, they may be able to get out of the East for another year, but they won't be able to win another title.
Stand pat, I like that. And the scary thing about Miami, if you're a Miami Heat fan, is that, yeah, sure, the Spurs are getting older. God willing, Tim Duncan may retire. I don't think he will. And
no, man, Timmy ain't retired, man. He got that new girlfriend, man. new. Let's just say, how can I say this in a PC sort of way?
Thrown up here.
Yeah, without getting thrown out, without getting fired from this free podcast. New woman, a new woman, much like a new pair of socks or a new pair of drawers, can make you feel good. And Timmy is looking younger and feeling more sprightly than he has in years.
That could be the case. You never underestimate the power of a good woman. But I'm just saying that even if the Spurs are too old or they no longer become an opposition for LeBron and the Miami Heat, assuming he stays, you've got a very deep Western Conference, and you've got teams like the Clippers, like the Warriors would be. Warriors could get Kevin Love is what I'm starting to hear. So this is just the beginning of his problems if he does not handle this free agency period correctly. And to be honest, I think Adam Silver – honestly, yeah, he is the commissioner, and he's going to say what's politically correct. But if you just kind of delve into that business mind of his and what would be best for the league, this scenario right now, the way it's playing out, is best for the league. We've seen the Heat dynasty. The Heat dynasty right now feels over. Sure, they could reload. But now the bigger storyline becomes, where will LeBron go? And it is a very legitimate storyline. And a lot of people think, he can't possibly leave Miami and go somewhere else because that would just make him look this, that, and the other. And don't think that for a second. You know, I know that there might be a small chance he leaves Miami, but the fact that people are talking about this makes this a great story to make the NBA relevant on the offseason, just the way the NFL is so able to make itself relevant throughout the offseason. And LeBron, where will he go, will be a legitimate discussion because he's going to have his team with him, and he's going to look around at legacy. What can I do to win 3 championships, to even come close to Jordan? What can I do to make LeBron James the greatest player of all time? And if that answer involves him going and playing with Carmelo in New York or any other crazy scenario you can think of and you've heard of, it can happen. Don't think that it can't.
I don't think as much power as LeBron has in this situation – I think the key component to whether this Heat team can move forward and reload and make another championship run is Dwayne Wade. Because if he opts out, I think that's a good sign for Miami Heat and their fans. But if he opts in, you're going to have a little bit of trouble keeping LeBron and Chris Bosh. You know, Dwayne Wade is not a guy that you can pay $20 million a year to anymore. If you want to give him that $40 million contract and spread it out over 4 years, I'm cool with that. Dwayne Wade is worth that. But at this stage of the game with, you know, he's not Flash anymore. You know, he's not the quick guy. He's the guy that is a mid-range jump shooter, and he can knock
is
down.
Is he even a spark plug?
He's solid. You know, Dwayne Wade to me he's not Robin anymore, but he's a good number three man. He'd be a hell of a six man coming off the bench. If your first guy off the bench is Dwayne Wade, who averaged, I think, 19 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds this year, that's your six man. Like that would be a hell of a move for the Miami Heat. But if Dwayne Wade is your number two guy, the guy that you're counting on to be, you know, your secondary scorer and your secondary assist man, that's not going to work.
If we're looking at the Heat right now, at this very moment, let's say the Heat, I mean, we've seen everything we've seen from the NBA, and they ask you, in hindsight, who's more valuable to the Heat? Okay, to this point, would you say it was LeBron James or Dwayne Wade? You have to figure everything, not just, you know, the last couple of years, and I know it's very easy, but it's a harder question to answer than you think.
I was going to say, that's more difficult than you think, because on court, I would say LeBron, but in terms of making things work, D-Wade, because D-Wade was the guy that had to say, this is my team, this is my city, I want a ring here, you have no rings. D-Wade was the guy that had to take a back step, had to take a back seat to LeBron. And if D-Wade didn't want to make that happen, it wouldn't have happened. And we've seen superstars get attitudes like that before. You know, Scottie Pippen catching a migraine because Phil drew up to play for Tony Kukoc in the playoffs. If Michael hadn't have come back, that team would not have worked with Scottie and Tony Kukoc. And I think it showed how unselfish D-Wade was to take that step back. But if you're telling me who's more valuable, you know, I guess you got to go with LeBron because he is the best player on the court. And when you have the best player, you know, he can put you in a position to be in a space to win. You know, they didn't win this year, but LeBron at least put him in a position to win.
I know, but if you want to look at value, I think I'm going Dwayne. He's got one more ring. I mean, LeBron had to come to Miami to win. And if you just look at their careers, Dwayne Wade had that just ridiculous NBA Finals when they beat the Mavericks, to where he almost literally carried a team that had Shaq on it. A lot of people look at the Heat acquiring Shaquille O'Neal and that being the turning point to where they got over the hump and they were able to win a championship. And as helpful as Shaq was to that cause, it was Dwayne Wade who pretty much dug them out of an 0-2 hole to win the NBA championships. And so if you take those two careers in the context of being in Miami, obviously you're talking greatest of all time as an individual player. I'm going LeBron. But as far as Miami Heat and that franchise's history, who's going to get the statue first, who's the mayor, who is going to be the more valuable commodity, I think Dwayne Wade has much more of a legacy in Miami as a Heat, despite the fact that LeBron James forged a dynasty there.
Oh, absolutely. Dwayne is Mr. Heat. Dwayne has more value to that franchise in terms of a historical context. But in terms of more valuable during this past 4 years, I'd say LeBron James.
Right. And I was more talking to about, you know, the franchise Heat. And the 4 years discussion is very interesting, too. I might lean towards LeBron.
Chris Bosh on the side. I'm not valuable. You don't think I'm valuable, guys?
You know, he's very valuable. And it's poor Chris Bosh, because you know he could be a star of that team just as easily, but he had to reduce his role, and that helped the team immensely that he was able to accept the fact, okay, I'm going to be a wing player. I'm going to stretch the boundary of where I can shoot. I'm going to be a three-point shooter. That helped the Heat. And without that, they're not winning anything, even though he did have 0 points last year in the decisive Game 7 against the Spurs. Without Chris Bosh willing to accept a lesser role, yet do it brilliantly, the Heat isn't winning one, let alone two championships. They're lucky they even won a second with LeBron.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, all three guys contributed. Ray Allen, you know, is a unsung hero, you know, kind of the fourth member of that quartet. But, you know, I think it'll be very interesting to see where Miami goes. I don't think they're out of the conversation at all in the East. I just think that they need to get younger. They need to get more international. They need to get faster. You know, they got to get LeBron some help. And maybe that comes in the form of Carmelo. I don't think Carmelo's the answer. I think they need a point guard more so than anything else. But we'll see. But I'm tired of talking about the Heat, man. Why are we talking about the losers, man? We need to be talking about the champions, Big Nasty. Your San Antonio Spurs. And one of the youngest MVPs in NBA final history. Man, it was Kawhi way on the highway. Kawhi Leonard, somebody who was absent. Like, Kawhi Leonard must have been on playoff CPT because he didn't show up at all the first two games. But those last three games, Kawhi Leonard, 29 points. Kawhi Leonard, 20 points. Kawhi Leonard, 22 points, 10 rebounds. He stepped up in those final three games. And that was kind of, you know, the tipping point, the turning point for the Spurs. And when you got the big three with Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, and then you got these young boys with Kawhi Leonard and Patty Mills, who last year looked more like a Patty Melt with his fat self, but he hit the gym. He got on that T25 or that P90X. I don't know what he used. Whatever he used, it worked, because Patty Mills was in shape and he was making some plays. Patty Mills' fat went to Boris Diaw, but it didn't even slow Boris down, because Boris Diaw was a player in the finals. And as much as people want to say the Spurs are old, man, I think the Spurs could very well make a run next year.
Absolutely.
Even if Tim Duncan doesn't come back.
Right. And, you know, I was kind of playing around with, like, a worst-case scenario, a best-case scenario, all the Spurs getting old, but don't think for one second they're going anyway. Because it's like when you saw the Celtics and then Len Bias came along, he was supposed to bridge that gap to keep the Celtics dynasty going. And the Celtics could have and should have been great for much longer than they were, even though they did enjoy an extended dynasty. This now is replaying itself as if Len Bias was to live on and actually have an NBA career. Now we're seeing how dangerous a well-run organization, well-coached organization with just great draft picks that blossom, we're seeing what that could have been through the Spurs. And it's like they have the big three, even though they're at the back end of their prime, it's still a very good back end. It's better than a lot of people's, especially the younger players' primes are right now.
They were able to dust young teams like the Thunder, who many thought were going to be in the NBA Finals. And we are able to see the next three. And this Kawhi Leonard MVP celebration, you saw how happy they were. I've never seen an ovation like that from within teammates for a MVP like Kawhi Leonard. And it's because it's like they're so excited for this franchise moving forward. It's like passing the torch, so to speak. So now we get Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, and Boris Diaw, although he's not really, doesn't strike me as a next generation guy, but he is going to be there to bridge the gap. So we got the big three. They're on their way out, and it's going to be a nice transition to the next three, especially as well as the Spurs are coached. So this thing is going to continue for a long time to where the Spurs, I think at the very least, are going to be competitive for the next 5, maybe 10 years.
Honestly, I would be, if I'm a Spurs fan, I'm more worried when Pop leaves than when Tim Duncan leaves, because Duncan, as great as he's been for the franchise, top 10 all-time NBA player, greatest power forward to ever step on the face of the earth, when Timmy leaves, he's going to leave the franchise in good hands. But who's going to be the captain of that ship when Pop leaves? That, to me, is a bigger dilemma on the horizon for the Spurs, you know, whether it's next year, 2 years, or 3 years down the road.
Right. And, what are people talking about with the Spurs? They're not talking about Tim Duncan. I mean, that's a footnote. They're talking about, look at the beautiful ball movement. Look at how great this team is. It's just the ultimate team and flowing type style, to where they've got this European three-point shooting extravaganza that, despite the Spurs' reputation for being a boring team, is very fun to watch. And that begins with coaching. It's Greg Popovich. He should have been the NBA Finals MVP if there could have been somebody to have it that was a coach. But, I mean, I'm more invested in Greg Popovich, if I'm a Spurs fan, than anything that goes on with the movable pieces, because Greg has shown. I mean, we even saw this play out, I believe it was last season, when he had that dust up with David Stern because he didn't play as starters, and that those backups took it to the Miami Heat. And we've seen what that entire team could do with the Miami Heat in a very important final series. So Greg Popovich is really the key to that Spurs dynasty.
Yeah, and I mean, the Spurs, to me, are just kind of the example in pro sports, even more so than the Patriots, because unlike the Patriots, the Spurs have never had a scandal. The Spurs are the example of how to build a franchise. You know, they've never, outside of Tim Duncan, which obviously, granted, is a big piece, they've never had, you know, those high draft picks. They've never really been the team to go after big-name free agents. They just kind of built everything from the ground up, and it starts at the top, and, you know, it starts with Pop. I'm glad the Spurs won. You know, as much as I like LeBron, I think this was a win that cements the Spurs' legacy, you know, with 5 titles over 15 years. And it also, you know, I think this was the first time that the Spurs had a challenger that you couldn't, you know, make excuses for. Because, you know, I guess in years past, people talk about the Knicks win was, you know, a strike season, and, you know, some of the other wins, they didn't face the most stiff competition. But this time they beat the reigning and defending champion, the Miami Heat, in their fourth straight finals, coming off of back-to-back championship wins. They came in, and they didn't just beat them. You know, this was like Ezekiel Jackson's old theme song. This here is what we call domination. It's a combination of skill and concentration. There was no question who the better team was in this series, Alfred.
And the average, I mean, you're dead on, because the average point differential for all those wins is the highest in NBA history. So,
Game five, the Heat started out 22-6 in the first quarter. 22-6. You can't even do that on NBA 2K on the Xbox and lose.
Yeah, and you want to talk about getting minimal performance out of Tony Parker, who's the sprightliest of the big three, and the Spurs still going on to just dust the Heat. And Tony Parker really didn't show up that entire game. He started catching a little bit of fire toward the end, but they didn't need Tony Parker, and that just tells you about their team basketball.
Tony Parker was out there too busy thinking about the World Cup. Which Ronaldo is it? Is it the bald one or the other one? Oh, man. We're going to end off the A block this week with a topic that is near to my heart geographically, but it's not really dear to my heart. I've expressed my opinions, whether it be on other shows or on Twitter, in terms of my feelings about the logo of the professional football team in the Washington, D.C. area. But today, for the second time, or this week, I guess, for the second time in history, the trademark, the patent for the Washington Redskins has been revoked on, I guess it was Wednesday. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office canceled the Redskins trademark, saying that the name is disparaging to Native Americans. And then you had Bob Raskoff, the Redskins attorney, come out and say that they plan to appeal the ruling. So, first of all, what are your, in a nutshell, what are your thoughts about the Redskins nickname and logo and everything? And also, you know, do you think, because, you know, like I said, this trademark has been revoked previously and nothing happened. Do you think because we're in a different climate that something actually happens this time around, Alfred?
I think because we're in a different era, and you know, I've said this on social media, we are in the era of outrage. And as much as I think that when all is said and done, social media will just be something that changes the world for the better, it's something that does have its side effects, if you will, and does have its pitfalls. And this world that we're living in where everybody's watching, I just don't feel comfortable with something people say or something people may feel, or in a moment of passion, you suddenly take up a cause that causes people to lose their jobs, causes people to have their businesses regulated by the government. Listen, the fact that I have not heard of this issue being this hot until the last couple of years when you can get 10 likes on Facebook for saying you're outraged by the Redskins makes me very skeptical to whether or not this really is offensive, or do you have something to gain? I mean, I'm seeing all these old senators and politicians coming out and saying, oh, this is offensive, and all these, now the political game is starting to take over, and people with something to gain stick their hands in the Redskins cookie jar and say, oh, what can I get out of this? You know, now that being offended by the Redskins gets you a seat in the Senate, now it's an issue, and that's what I don't like about this. That's what I don't trust about this. I've heard from some Native Americans that the Redskin name is an honor, and they consider it not to be offensive. I heard from others that it is offensive. I can see both sides of the spectrum. And as an unbiased party, I understand why Daniel Snyder would want to keep that name, especially because you had years and decades and all, you know, several decades to be outraged by this, for this movement to really take form. And it hasn't taken form until the last few years where people are overreacting, people have something to gain, and Donald Dan Snyder just seems to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And for that, I do not agree with the Redskins' trademark being taken away.
You almost called him Donald Sterling.
I did. They've got the same initials, and they're both owners who are embattled by the league. So you can't blame me for making that Freudian slip.
Donald Sterling, FYI, by the way, has a hot new black girlfriend who, I'm just like, sister girl, what the hell is wrong with you?
All the pan. He know he has a history of paying black people off. The NAACP. The guy knows he's got a Rolodex. Like, okay, which one of these can I pay off this time?
Like that preacher said the other week, man. These hoes ain't loyal. But back to the Redskins. Like I've always found the name off color. No pun intended. You know, and I know some of y'all might be thinking that this is a little bit hypocritical because I am a Braves fan. But to me, the Redskin name, you know, it's a slur, you know, and it'd be like, I don't know if you ever saw this, the guy on a Comic View, the old comedian, Michael Blackson, the guy that would dress up like an African, quote unquote.
Yes, yeah, I remember him.
Let me tell you, I'm not scared of you mother suckers.
Yes.
Yeah. Turns out he wasn't even African. He's from Detroit. But he had this one joke where he was, like, talking about the Redskins, and he's like, you know, how can you have the name of the team be a slur? It'd be like having a team in New York called the New York Niggers. I'm like, you know what? It's a joke, but it's kind of true. It'd be like having a team called the New York Niggers or the Cleveland Crackers or the San Diego Spicks. And obviously I'm using these names and to prove a point, and, you know, no offense to all of our listeners of all races and creeds and colors out there, because you know the Kings of Sport love you. But it's like, you know, I don't know how much you said it's an era of outrage, but if even, let's say, 15 or 20 or 25% of Native Americans are offended by this, who's to say that that's not valid? You know what I mean?
And that's not the point I'm trying to make. I'm not saying it's not valid. If you're offended, great. You know, what I'm saying is I'm kind of trying to classify myself as somebody who doesn't know, who's unbiased. The fact that there's even 25%, I don't care what the percentage is, the fact that there is a percentage of people who are offended and there is a percentage of people who are not offended, you know, because let's pull people who are offended by the N-word, which is a very extreme comparison, but you would get overwhelmingly it's offensive, almost 99% probably, I would hope. But with that name, it's polarizing enough to where, okay, now I don't know. So what, now you go to like, what are people getting outraged for? Is there something that they can gain from it? And once you go down that road, you can easily prove that, yes, there is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think part of my bias on this issue is not just, you know, my kind of distaste with the name, but also I'm just sick of Dan Snyder, man. Dude's had the team for like 15 years, ran through, what, six different coaches? What's the old Jay-Z line when he was talking to Nas? Like, that's a one hot album every 10
years. One hot album every 10-year average, yeah. And that's so lame.
Yeah, Daniel Snyder's like, that's a two hot coach every 10-year average.
If that.
Yeah, let me just read these names before we go to break. Marty Schottenheimer, good coach, right?
Very good coach in regular season.
Love Marty. Steve Spurrier. Joe Gibbs came back. Okay.
He had a nice little run.
Give respect to the legend.
He's so that, great, and when he came back, it wasn't
so. Yeah. Now he's where it gets good. Jim Zorn.
Oh, yes.
Let's not forget the interim coaching tenure of Terry Rubisky.
Terry Rubisky, baby! what team is he doing quality controls for now?
I have no idea. I know his son was in the league for like a hot second. And the only reason I knew his son was in the league was because every time I played the new version of Madden, he would always get released. I'm like, oh, Brian Rubisky. What's up, man? So after Terry Rubisky and Jim Zorn, we went to Mike Shanahan, and we all saw how that played out. Yes. And now they're in the Jay Gruden era. So, you know, Daniel Snyder, and also not only is he a bad owner, but – he's a bully. If you live in this area and saw some of the stuff that he went against some of the local press in D.C., and it's just, I mean, I've been in the man's media box at the Verizon Center, so, you know, on that hand, I love Daniel Snyder because it's a nice box, stocked with plenty of goodies and drinks. But from an ownership standpoint, He's like Jerry Jones light without the championship rings.
He's a horrible owner, and I have been very critical of him. So the fact that I'm even coming close to defending him shows, you know, how strongly I feel about this. And not only is he bad owner when it comes to coaches, I mean, if you really want to get comical with the Redskins and how they're run, you would read the list of free agents that they've had. And what's crazy about the Redskins, it's like they have these elite Hall of Fame level players that they recruit to come to Washington. Like I always say, the Green Bay Packers are masters at getting a back end free agent who's at the end of his career and making them, you know, superstars and getting the most out of them that they can. Reggie White, Charles Woodson, I believe that's going to happen with Julius Peppers. With the Redskins, they'll get Deion Sanders, who, I mean, you can argue was one of the best football players of all time, let alone cornerbacks. And he went to Washington and died. So, I mean, this guy just, not only can he not catch a break, if it's that consistent, you're a bad owner.
Yeah, but there is a silver lining in this dark cloud of the Redskins' patent being revoked, Big Nasty.
What's up?
You and me can get into business making some bootleg Redskins shirts, man.
That we can! Because they're going to appeal it, there's no telling whether or not it'll get overturned.
Yeah,
so we got a little window to make some money.
Go to kingsofsports.com. We're going to have these hot Redskins shirts up over the weekend. What's the Homeboy Shopping Network? Get it while you can, because we might not be here next week. So that's going to do it for second one. It's going to do it for the A-Block. And if we're still on the air, still on iTunes after the nigga and cracker and spick talk, we will be back talking about the world of professional wrestling, where there is a new black world heavyweight champion. We'll be talking about the ratchetness in segment four, and we will be giving a somber farewell and tribute to one of the greatest hitters in the history of Major League Baseball. So that's all coming up on today's show. Nasty and Nate hold things down. Marcus may or may not join us, but if you want to find that out, you'll have to stick and stay, because there's more Kings of Sport right after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's not just any day. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday.
Hey, everybody. You remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do, too. My name is Jamie Robinson, and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host, Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT, or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Nasty and Nate, the alliterative duo, returns. And before we get started with the Ringside Wrap, I'd just like to wish you and yours a very happy Ivan Kapula Day. It is also a United Nations Public Service Day. I'd like to wish everybody a happy Victory Day. And of course, above all else, a very nasty birthday, because we are traveling through time and space. And I don't know if you could tell by my voice, but I did have a very nasty birthday this past weekend, that being June 23rd. Today, Nate, is also Father's Day in Nicaragua, Poland, and Uganda. And one father who may be scratching his head more than he was in, what was it, 1996, may be Dusty Rhodes, as he got to see his son Cody come out, not as Cody Rhodes, not as dashing Cody Rhodes, not in a mask, but as Stardust, which is basically a knockoff of the Goldust character, and has a similar amount of shock and awe upon his debut. So just give me your thoughts of the Stardust character, Nate. First, how far do you think it's going to go?
Well, first of all, I thought you were going to send a Happy Father's Day shout out to Kamala, the Ugandan giant.
No, that is not my daddy, despite the rumors.
you're not slapping not your
belly. Related. We're not all related, Nathan. You see what WWE has done to the mind? This is what the Kamala character does. Now, everyone said, I'm tired of this African buffoon.
I'm saying, I thought I heard you slapping your belly over the weekend.
I've got it. Maybe that's titanium. If you heard me slapping my belly, it would be that six pack of titanium.
No, man, but this Stardust character, Let's start with the positives, Alfred. The positives, it's a fantastic entrance. The production team always top-notch in the WWE. Cody. Yes, thank you, Mr. Carman. Cody portrays the character well. I guess that guy was driving by. They talking about Cody Rhodes. I love Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, honk if you like Cody Rhodes.
Yeah. But I don't know where they're going with this, man, because for weeks and months, they teased the breakup of the Rhodes brothers. And then we went through a couple weeks of this deal where Cody's like, you know, you need a better partner. You need a better brother. And now he comes out in this Stardust gimmick, which screams heel turn to me, which screams it's only a matter of time before he turns on his brother. But I don't know if they're going to go that route. This may be Cody Rhodes' role for the foreseeable future.
And according to reports, WWE doesn't know if they're going to go that route either, because apparently the plan is if this thing gets over, they're going to keep them together as a tag team, then it will go the heel turn route. So they do have a little bit of flexibility with this. I'm just shocked, and I don't think that this is a good decision either way. Like, let's say it does get over, and Cody Rhodes is able to become popular as a Stardust character, which I do think he has the talent to pull off. Then he's in that Damian Sandow role where he's really, really good at turning chicken shit into chicken salad, and he's getting over with a gimmick that's only going to go so far. Cody Rhodes is not going to be carrying around a WWE World Heavyweight Championship as Stardust. And while I hate, you know, comparing everybody to whether or not they can win a world title, Cody Rhodes is one of those few stars who I do see top-level potential, especially based on the fact that WWE tends to push guys with that generational experience, guys who have been trained in the WWE system. So you do have to look at Cody Rhodes as somebody who, not like a mid-card, but somebody who can go up to the top, and this gimmick, I think, has all but damned him.
Was it only a year or so ago, year and a half, maybe 2 years, where he had that big program with Damian Sandow over the Money in the Bank briefcase? And Cody seemed like Cody seemed like a top level guy. And now you look at both of those guys where their careers have gone in the past 12 months, and it's like, you know, I think they really missed an opportunity with the Rhodes Brothers tag team. I thought it was cool that, you know, you had Goldust as this freak, and then Cody Rhodes is just this regular straight laced, clean cut kid, and you know, they worked together because they were family. And now with Cody going this route, you're right. There's a ceiling. There's a limitation built into the character. You know, this guy is not going to win any titles in this garb. You know, even you talk about the world title, I don't even think he's going to win any secondary titles as Stardust.
No, not at all. His only ceiling is the tag team titles. This is a gimmick that is strictly designed for a tag team because him and Goldust are going to be matching, and you kind of get the gimmick. He's not going to feud. Hopefully, he's not going to feud with Goldust and Stardust, even if he does turn heel. But the thing about this gimmick that I've also noticed is you see Cody Rhodes stand right next to Goldust, and he's always been a smaller dude, but in his regular ring getup, it's not as pronounced. With his Stardust, you think Robin does next to Batman. He just looks like a little kid standing next to Goldust. It's like, when I saw it at first, I seriously thought it was Hornswoggle impersonating Goldust because they did it from a wide angle shot, and it's just smaller version of Goldust. So when I actually saw it in the ring, it just kind of took some getting used to. So I just think that this is a bad, bad gimmick. I think it's bad news, and I don't think WWE should soldier on. But speaking of bad news,
don't give the Vince McMahon any ideas, because I do think the next step in this thing is not only do you have Goldust, Big Dust, not only do you have Cody Rhodes, Stardust, Medium Dust, but since Hornswoggle is not doing anything right now, 3MB has been disbanded, I could very well see Mini Dust showing up sometime in the near future.
It could happen. And there you go. I mean, they've done the Mini Dust thing before. And so, you know, they just more rehashing by the WWE. But something else WWE is going to be rehashing at Money in the Bank is another Money in the Bank match. There had been rumbles of WWE inserting a second ladder match for the briefcase, which I think works. I think this way we get two ladder matches at Money in the Bank. One's for the title, the other's for a briefcase. So you're not devaluing the briefcase, yet you're getting two high quality matches, which is always the case at these Money in the Bank pay-per-views. Only one person has been announced for the Money in the Bank ladder match for the briefcase, and that's Seth Rollins. So let me know, Nate, who you think is going to win this match and who you expect to see competing for the second briefcase.
It could go a lot of different ways with this. You know, I could easily see, you know, Roman Reigns winning the title match, the title ladder match, and Seth Rollins, you know, winning the secondary traditional Money in the Bank match. But then again, it may be a little too soon for that. I think, you know, Rollins and Ambrose looks to be the first feud that they're going to go with. You know, I could see, like we talked about a few weeks ago, I could see Bray Wyatt winning the Money in the Bank. You know, if they want to go the safe route, John Cena could be that guy that wins the title Money in the Bank match. But in terms of your secondary match, I think it'll be a good match in terms of work rate. But on the other hand, Big Nasty, I think it almost devalues this match because it's like, you know, we've got two Money in the Bank matches. In the past, when we've had two matches, they've been for two different briefcases, whether it's Raw or SmackDown or the WWE Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship. But now it's like you got the one for the title and the one for the number one contenders match. And just by human nature, that number one contenders match, the guy is not going to be looked at as big as the guy that won the World Heavyweight title. I think it takes a little bit of the shine off of that win.
I tend to disagree. I mean, I absolutely agree with the standpoint that it's not going to be as big as the WWE World Heavyweight Championship win, but that has been the case with this format. Is usually there's one, when they had two titles, there was one briefcase match that was competed for the WWE Championship and one for the World Championship, and they made it clear. In fact, I think it was last year, they had the Money in the Bank All-Stars was the WWE Championship, and then the other Money in the Bank match. So by design, it wasn't as big. But I don't think that takes away from the value, because traditionally, these secondary matches are filled with hungry guys, younger guys, guys who are going to take those crazy bumps, and those matches are almost always better. And I fully expect the briefcase match to be better than a match filled with guys like Randy Orton, John Cena, guys who aren't going to do crazy bumps and guys who are already proven and aren't going to be hungry. So yes, they're going to have one match that isn't as valuable, but the fact that it's a Money in the Bank briefcase shot for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, I don't think it devalues it. I just think it makes it not as important, but a very important step toward the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, I mean, from a match standpoint, I think that number one contenders match, that traditional Money in the Bank match, will be the better match. But, you know, it depends on how they play it, how they book it, you know, because you want to have that winner come out strong. But you also don't want to have them overshadowed by the winner of that World Heavyweight Championship. And, you know, I think it's all going to be a corollary, because whoever wins the championship match, you want to have somebody that matches with them and meshes with them and sets up a good program. And as much as people think that they're going to go in this new direction with the World Heavyweight Championship, I still think that, all things considered, it makes more sense to go and put that belt on John Cena. Even though that's not what the IWC wants, I have a feeling that the champ is going to be here come Money in the Bank.
And who cares what the IWC wants? They're still going to watch, and there's a reason they don't book wrestling. And they're just so myopic to think that John Cena shouldn't be the Money in the Bank winner. It's like voting against your own interest. IWC right now, as always, reminds me of, like, Mississippi, which just is historic for voting against its own interests. It's one of the poorest countries, states in the nation, and yet they don't want welfare and they don't want handouts and this, that, and the other. And it just completely doesn't make sense that they don't adhere to more liberal values that would probably help them. When it comes to the IWC, they say, we don't want John Cena. Well, you love Daniel Bryan so much. If they go with somebody other than Daniel Bryan, that's probably an indication that they've moved on from the Yes Movement. If they go to John Cena, there are plenty of inroads that Daniel Bryan can make to return and win the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. So John Cena's your best friend right now, and I fully expect John Cena to win that Money in the Bank ladder match. As far as a briefcase match, I think it has to be Rusev. I mean, I could see Wade Barrett, but the way they've been pushing Rusev, I think that briefcase would just fit his gimmick perfectly, how they come out and do these diplomatic segments every week. And it's really starting to catch on and get over as a heel that is not only this just cookie cutter anti-American heel, but he's actually starting to make a connection with the crowd through these gimmicks, like with Lana and Vladimir Putin. And that's great. I think he could just build his character from there.
Well, and if you're going with Cena, Rusev makes sense because you've got, you know, kind of the cartoon all-American hero versus the cartoon, you know, Russian communist heel.
Right, but and you can't really assume that that's just going to be the next feud is the matches. You could have this briefcase for up to a year. So, I mean, Rusev will have the opportunity over the next couple of months to carry around this briefcase. And then whenever he cashes in, by the time he does that, I mean, we could be long removed from a Cena championship run.
That's a good point. I still think that Rollins is going to be the guy. I just have a feeling that it adds more heat to him. And then if you give Rollins the Money in the Bank briefcase, I still think regardless of who wins that Money in the Bank match, that John Cena is going to come out with the title. Because you look at the names, Alberto Del Rio, Randy Orton, they're stale. Sheamus, the kids love him, but nobody else does. Cesaro would be interesting because there's always that match out there with Lesnar. Bray Wyatt is interesting. Roman Reigns, I think, is going to be a champion someday, but I don't know if he's ready yet. You know, your champion shouldn't be doing silly skits in the back with Vicky Guerrero. So all things considered, I'm still going to stick with my pick of John Cena.
It's funny you mentioned that Roman Reigns may not be ready yet for a WWE World Heavyweight Championship run. What I'm wondering, Nate, and it's a great question for you, is TNA ready for New York? And they have these New York tapings coming up. They're coming off a strong Slammiversary pay-per-view. And, of course, we have a new world champion in Bobby Lashley. So I wanted to get a quick state of the TNA address. Where do you think things stand with this company? And do they have the momentum required to really kill it in New York and make a difference for their business?
Yes, this is a great week for African-American wrestling fans. Not only have Crime Time been reunited, but we have a new black world heavyweight champion in TNA, and that is one Bobby Lashley. And, you know, we were talking before we got on the air here, and I think to me that tells me that MVP is hurt a lot more than we previously thought, because the natural way to go with that storyline would have been to put the belt on MVP. But now we've got it on Lashley, who, you know, in the ring and, you know, from a physical standpoint, is everything you would want a world champion to be. He just can't talk. And so it's a blessing that MVP is there to talk for this guy. I think that TNA, you know, as you mentioned, they got some big shows coming up. They're coming off of a good pay-per-view. I was going to say great. It wasn't great, but it was very good, very strong. And then Impact last week was a strong show in front of a hot crowd in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. The New York shows, they're already loading up, you know, with the Hardy Boys, with Bully Ray, with Tommy Dreamer, with the Great Muta. So, you know, they're catering to that hardcore fan base. I think the next few weeks, you know, because we're not going to see the New York shows on TV, I think, for another month. So, you know, it's going to be interesting right now because everything that they're doing is geared towards Bound for Glory in October and also that renewal of that Spike TV contract. And so I think they're making steps in the right direction. They're even considering bringing back the six-sided ring. They're taking steps in the right direction, but as we've seen in this company's past and history, right steps don't always equal to a great destination. And so, you know, things are still out there in the open. But I do think that they're making some strides in the right direction.
Now, you're talking about TNA taking steps in the right direction. From a storyline standpoint, because as you mentioned, they are headed toward Bound for Glory, could these New York tapings hurt TNA from a storyline standpoint in that they're doing all this hot spot booking, they're bringing back the Hardy Boys, and it kind of seems like it may be like the show away from the show, just kind of like tribute show. They're doing all this stuff to appeal to a New York fan base, yet they're getting away from their storyline. So how do you think that's going to affect the continuity in terms of TNA television programming leading to a pay-per-view?
I think it shouldn't hurt them at all if they're smart. You know, big if. If they're smart, if they have their long-term booking in place. You know, I think you can still tell the ultimate story you want to tell, which is MVP and his group MLK, as our friends at the law call them. If MLK, you know, the story you want is some babyface, whether that's Eric Young or Bobby Roode or Austin Aries or Samoa Joe, you want that babyface to become triumphant over this group that's been running roughshod over the company. And you can still tell that story while, you know, doing things that cater to the hardcores. And, you know, Destination X is going to be one of those shows in New York. You know, I think there's a cool story to be told if, you know, if you keep the belt on Sonata and you have Sonata going up against this mountain of a man and Bobby Lashley for one of those shows. You know, that's a pretty cool little side story that still ties into the main narrative of MVP and this group, you know, holding everybody down. And I think that there's two big moments that you want to see. One is the moment where the hero of TNA, you know, gets the title away from Lashley and brings that back to the company. And two is Dixie Carter going through a table. And I think we will get both of those spots on Bound for Glory.
Wow. Both of those spots. Yeah, and I can see that, but it's just, it's going to be a long buildup toward that table spot for Dixie. But I do think it's going to be worth it.
Yeah. And I think like this week in New the show's coming up in New York, which are this week, but we won't see them for another month and a half. I think that, you know, that's going to be an amazing segment or segments with Bully Ray and probably Tommy Dreamer cutting these passionate promos against Dixie Carter and EC3, and the crowd is going crazy, and they'll probably do a couple teases with Dixie being on the table but not actually going through because they can't do it on Spike TV. But when that moment actually happens, like, I think that'll be a big moment. It could be a write-off for Dixie for hopefully a long, long time. And, you know, there's a new authority figure on the horizon, spoiler alert, if you don't want to be spoiled, earmuffs for the next 30 seconds. Apparently Kurt Angle is going to be an authority figure. And, you know, maybe after Bound for Glory, we get rid of MVP as an authority figure. We get rid of Dixie as an authority figure. And it's just Kurt Angle in a role that allows him to talk and be entertaining, but not wrestle.
Yeah, if there is going to be another authority figure in Kurt Angle, I think he should be the only one. They should kind of reduce that. More authority figures in wrestling is almost never a good idea, and it just kind of convolutes and takes away from what the wrestling storyline really is. But you talk about Dixie possibly going through a table. When we come back, we're going to talk about a prodigy standing up against a wall. More Kings of Sport, segment 4.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. PlaceToBeNation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons, to the return of the hack, to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. I want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PiledriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out placetobenation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/the Kings of Sport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Nasty and Nate holding things down for yet another week. getting ready to close up shop. But before we do, we have to end things off the way we do each and every episode. And that is with the one and only, often imitated but never ever duplicated, segment four, the segment where we take a look at all of the ratchetness and crazy stories from the world of sports, from the world of entertainment, from just pop culture in general. We throw it in a pot, mix it up, and give it to you with some hot sauce on the side. But before we get into our stories this week, we've got a bit of an update for longtime listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, and it is a joyous announcement because one of the Kings, much like George and Weezy, has moved on up out of the ghetto. Big Nasty, is it true that you are out of the ghetto?
Way out of the ghetto. Couldn't get out fast enough. I'm one of the. I'm residing from parts unknown these days, but it's a very beautiful part of parts unknown. I'm no longer a resident of the ghetto, so my car has less of a likelihood to get jacked. Although, dude, where's my car? That episode did do pretty well with our listeners, so apparently the listeners like my pain.
You're just like Kevin Hart, the guest from Raw this past week. They just like laughing at your pain.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty funny. In hindsight, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, you can laugh at it now because you come through it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I like it when things all twerk out in the end, when a plan comes together.
It is great when things twerk out, I agree.
Speaking of things twerking out, this is probably my favorite story of the day, and I just discovered it 30 minutes ago. There was a bit of a golf tournament over this past weekend, Big Nasty.
Yes.
And ironically, it was bookended by stories about little Asian girls. The U.S. Open, of course, is what I'm talking about. And I guess Lucy Lee was the 11-year-old that was the talk of the tournament in the opening round. And, of course, she didn't do nothing because she's an 11-year-old. And I don't know why people expected this 11-year-old to do anything great in this tournament. Just the fact that she was there is an accomplishment. What are you doing with your life, 45-year-old man that was criticizing this little 11-year-old girl? I just want to say that because I was on Twitter and you see these people criticizing this little kid. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, you always find that bottom five. There is something for everybody on Twitter. And unfortunately, some of those people just, man.
Now, you said the term bottom five, and we're going to get into some bottoms. A bottom that may be in the top five. I don't know. It depends on your particular ranking system. But
I can put it up there. I can put it up there.
Oh, she did put it up there. Michelle Wee won the U.S. Open. She shot a 70 in the final round. And this is a pretty cool story. You know, before we even get into the ratchetness aspect of it, just that, you know, this was a girl that, much like this Lucy Lee child, you know, she was very criticized early on in her career. She had like the Richard Williams stage father. What was his name? BJ or VJ?
Oh, I have no idea. Was it VJ?
I think it was BJ. BJ Wee. Let me look that up just to make sure.
Talk about it. What kind of name? Korean names.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was BJ.
We have initials.
BJ Wee is a daddy, and like it was almost like a corollary or a parallel to the Tiger Woods Earl Woods relationship, except BJ was a little bit more Richard Williams than Earl Woods in terms of he liked that limelight and he often ran his mouth at inappropriate times, and Michelle ruffled a few feathers, and not only that, but she wasn't living up to the hype on the course. She wasn't living up to the hype out there on the green. But this is kind of like a redemption story. You know, she's 24 now, and she wins her first major. I think this is her sixth win on the tour overall. And, you know, it's just a cool story because I don't know about you, but Michelle Wee kind of became a footnote in history. And then this weekend, it's like, Michelle Wee won the U.S. Open. It's like, oh, good for her.
Yeah, I thought she was dead until I heard she won the U.S. Open. So, yes, good for Michelle Wee. And the thing about this that I thought was interesting is you get to see this child prodigy come into the game at age 11, and she stole all the headlines. And you know Michelle Wee was just looking at this, seeing herself through this child, and at the same time maybe getting a little bit jealous of the fact that now here comes another child prodigy that may be everything you were supposed to be, and that could have just been the motivation she needed to win this tournament. Remember, Golf is a very mental game. A majority of the golfing game is mental. So that type of motivation may have been more than enough to get Michelle in position for her first major, and there may be more to come. Maybe this is a new Michelle Wee.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm very happy for her. And she was very happy with this win, obviously, because not only did we see her celebrate on television, but Deadspin has apparently gotten a hold of some footage of Michelle celebrating after the fact. And she had a party. She got, you know, her friends together. They had a victory celebration. And in the video, which Big Nasty is going to see for the first time in just a few seconds, Michelle
Wee, I got my finger on the trigger.
She not only drinks beer out of the U.S. Open trophy, she twerks on a wall, she flashes the middle finger, and she is just, you know, she's getting turned up. She's getting turned up. So
okay. I'm putting it on right now.
Big Nasty, take a look at this and give me your first impressions.
Oh, man. Is that her in the hat drinking the...
Yeah, with the hat. Ah. With the ball cap backwards, yeah.
Turned down for what? Oh, man. I love it. I love it because it's coming from, like, this is the last person that if you were to tell me, like, a celebrity was twerking, guess who? Like, Michelle Wee, the golfer, the lady golfer from Korea? This is amazing.
Oh, this is great. Yeah.
Turned down for what just passed up Psy for number one on the charts in Korea, by the way.
Really?
No more Gangnam Style for you guys.
Wow. But, yeah, like, I guess her people took down the pictures and the videos, but you can go on Deadspin and check it out. Like, there's pictures of her and her friends on the wall, and like I said, flashing the middle finger. And it's like, this is like, you know, BJ is sitting at home like, Michelle, what is this? But I think
this is like a heel turn. This is just she won the championship, so now she's heel, and she has to go to these dirty deeds in order to continue to win. And now she's just going to cheat on every hole and, you know, get these crooked victories.
Well, first of all, she wasn't turning her heel. That was a different part of the anatomy. But I like it. I think that golf as a sport needs characters, needs personalities. Even though she didn't show this on the course, we got this through the beauty of social media and the beauty of friends that don't know the meaning of the word discretion. Like, you know, if you got somebody in your team, like Big Nasty, you're a public figure. You know, you got somebody in your team on one of your mini romps to Vegas, and you might do something unscrupulous like hop behind a bar and steal alcohol. You don't want that footage getting out.
No, not at all.
And the people on your team know not to put that footage out. But somebody in Michelle's camp was like, yo, they probably were drunk. And if you see this video, the U.S. Open trophy, it is filled to the brim with beer, like a miniature version of the Stanley Cup. And she is chugging. Like, it is pretty cool. Like, I like it, but at the same time, in this social media age, like, you got to know the people on your team. Like, they gotta be under a, what's that, like a confidentiality clause.
Maybe she wanted this out. You know, maybe this is something that she funneled out there to let everybody know, I'm not your little girl anymore. You know, you can have your prodigy, but I'm going to be Michelle Wee, the newly formed ratchet gangster who's going to destroy golf for the next 10 years. I like this. I'm turned on right now.
She hit you with that Britney Spears, I'm not a girl, not quite a woman.
Yes.
But yeah, I like it. I think it's fun. It's harmless fun. It's not like she, you know, went out to Perkins and slept with 24 waitresses.
Not that we know of, no.
But yeah, it's stories like this that make golf interesting to me. And you know, I'm not somebody that watches golf when Tiger Woods is not a part of the equation. But now, you know, now that Michelle Wee is back or on the road back, I might start watching female golf more. Which for me, watching female golf more means watching female golf at all.
Yeah, if she could brand herself as this, like, female Johnny Manziel character, I do think it'll be good for golf. I don't care what anybody says. We're going to have to think of a pun, of like an Asian pun that's not offensive, that ties Johnny Manziel with Michelle Wee.
after some of the racial terminology we used in segment one, I'm staying as far away from that as possible.
Yeah, you can sit this one out, Nate.
But yeah, I think, she needs to start hanging out with celebrities like Miley Cyrus and Britney. Britney might be a little too old for her, though. Like, who's the ratchet young star out there? Rihanna?
Chris Brown. Oh, you're talking about the female standpoint?
Yeah.
Rihanna could qualify.
Rihanna is definitely, she's got I wouldn't say she's got a monopoly on ratchetness, but she's in the ratchet top five right now.
Yeah. So the power rankings, she's always a perennial favorite to be in the.
She's Alabama in the ratchet rankings.
In the coach's poll? The coach's like, oh, yes, she's, oh, yes, definitely ratchet.
Oh, but so, yeah, we go from a U.S. Open win to a U.S. win that wasn't so open and the door closed. That's a terrible segue, but.
It was a good save. I like the save.
That was the only save the Americans have seen lately. Boom.
Hey.
Boom.
Man, you're gonna go after Tim Howard like that? I mean, he was the star of that game.
Hey, I'm not going after Tim Howard at all. Like to me, the soccer goalies and the hockey goalies, man, they get undue criticism because it's like, come on, man, I'm back here saving all these shots. And, you know, my defense in front of me, what are they doing for these last 30 seconds? What are they doing? What's their job? I can't stop everything, man.
And not a lot of people are blaming Tim Howard. The criticism now is falling on Michael Bradley because he's had some late-game gaffes where he's turned the ball over. And it was that late turnover that led to a furious goal-scoring opportunity for Portugal that snatched victory out of the jaw, or snatched a tie out of the jaws of defeat. And it really did feel like the United States lost. I mean, it was just going to be a historic win. I was in a bar watching this in Santa Barbara, and people were going crazy chanting USA, and it just went from loud hysteria to absolute radio silence the minute that ball went into the goal. And it's just one of the craziest turns I've ever seen.
And one of the best videos that popped up in the aftermath of that, well, I was on Facebook, and, you know, the listeners know that you and I both have a professional affinity for Lolo Jones. And Lolo had posted this video or this Vine, and it was like in the span of 30 seconds on the left side of the screen, she was happy and twerking that the United States won. Again, twerking is a constant theme in this week's segment four. And then on the other side of the screen, after the goal went in, she was just deflated and defeated. And I think that's how most of the country felt. And this time of year, you always get the nationalistic, almost bandwagon soccer fans, and it's easy to get caught up in hysteria. And I'm somebody that is not, like, I watch hockey more than I watch soccer. I watch female golf more than I watch soccer. That should tell you my
oh, that's level. Just because she was twerking.
Hey.
Are you watching female golf, or have you watched that video enough times to qualify as watching more than soccer?
Hey, the trophy was in the video, so that qualifies as watching female golf. I think we have to tweet that out to the listeners today so they can enjoy this as much as we have.
Absolutely.
But, you know, getting back to the World Cup game, it's like I am somebody that enjoys the World Cup much like I enjoy the Olympics. Like, I root for stories. I don't root for countries or teams because, to me, it's all, you know, all it is millionaires playing other millionaires while billionaires sit in the stands. And don't even get me started on the hypocrisy of FIFA and what they do to the countries, you know, that they hold the World Cup in. These, you know, the stories of people being displaced in Brazil, you know, it makes me sick. But, you know, that's sports these days. But I'm rooting for stories. You know, I'm not rooting for countries. I'm not rooting for teams. So when you had your boys Ghana, when they lost to the United States, that was a good story. That was a good story because, you know, I got to laugh at you. And then when they got the tie against Germany.
Yeah.
Like that was
the unexpected tie.
That was great. Spain and England falling off. you know, some of these big name teams. Like this, I root for stories, and the best story to me is, you know, what we've got right now, Big Nasty, where it's like, you know, one or two games can change the course of, you know, who advances in this thing.
Yeah, and I root for nations as well as stories, and I'm rooting for Ghana, as you may have heard by now. And listen, I'm not rooting against the United States. I thought it was a very good game. This team has looked as good, if not better, than any United States team I've seen, and I do feel good about their future.
Were you rooting for Nigeria the other day? That's the big question.
That's another story. I can't say I was, but they look good. I mean, it's all love with West African soccer. There's too much of a rivalry between – Nigeria's like the outlier to where if they would have lost, I would have shed a tear. But I was – you know, the Ghana team, I think, in this group of death, Group G, has looked better as a whole, minute by minute, than any of the other teams. I mean, USA has had too many gaps. Ghana had that mental error and was playing at 50% and still almost beat USA, or at least tied them. And I think they're a team that I would love to see advance, not only because I love Ghana and it's close to Liberia, but because this is one of the more exciting young teams to watch. Scored over 20 goals in the, you know, leading up to the World Cup when they were qualifying, and just a frenetic offensive pace that Germany was clearly not ready for. And Germany's a team that everybody thought was going to run away with the World Cup. And now we're getting this free-for-all on Thursday. Nate, you were talking about stories. One of the best stories that could have been created was if Portugal tied or beat the USA, because now it comes down to a Thursday night. All these games are going to be going on at the same time, and it's winner take all. If you win, you're in. If you lose, it comes down to a crazy finish or goal differential, and there's all kinds of scenarios that can play out. So it's going to force you to tune into your television, and soccer's going to love this instead of having these games where teams are eliminated and they're just playing for pride. That's not good for ratings. Now, there are conspiracy theories out there, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do think that there's validity to this, that Germany and USA may prearrange some type of a tie. And if Germany and USA tie, both of them advance. The coach for USA is German. There are a lot of German players on the USA team. There could be a scenario where we see a 0-0 game with no shots on goal, no tackle. And if it does happen, I'm crying shenanigans. And you want to talk about the FIFA system being screwed up. If that happens, this would be a travesty and a black eye for FIFA as a whole.
And this wouldn't be the first time that Germany or the United States screwed a bunch of black people. just keeping it real. Especially Africans.
Hey, what was that to talk about staying away from racial sentiments?
Just when I think I'm out, you keep pulling me back in. You're serving up these racial softballs, man. I got to knock them out of the park.
Yes, I'm trolling you with these.
But I did want to, you know, mention something because it was kind of funny this week. I don't know if it was the coach or one of the officials on Team USA. They were like, the Americans needed a rap song in order to connect with the youth of America, which to me was just ridiculous. But if any team should have a rap theme song, I think it should be Ghana, because they are the Black Stars. Any hip hop head knows that Black Star is Mos Def, Talib Kweli. I think you know, they should work something out, especially since Mos Def is like hanging out in Africa now. I don't know if he's been allowed back in the country yet, but last time Marcus and I talked about it, he wasn't allowed back in the country, so.
Yeah, I would love to see something like that. He could be a black star today. I mean, he's literally a black star through his association with Kweli and that backpacking, very underrated duo that I think did good things lyrically for hip hop. And yeah, hey, maybe he could be like a team mascot, run out there, do a little freestyle. And instead of the Ghana national anthem, we can get maybe a verse or two, maybe a freestyle from Mos Def and Talib Kweli. I'm down for that.
That would make me watch soccer. Then I would watch soccer if each team had like a theme song and wrestlers. Like, you know, like at WrestleMania when Flo Rida brought out, what was it, Flo Rida brought out The Rock?
The Rock.
And then you had, what was the MGK? Brought out John Cena. Yeah, you should have like groups bring out their countries. But like who would be the group that best represents America?
Oh, God. Well, for some people, depending on what America you're talking about, it could be Lynyrd Skynyrd.
It's America. But no, I think it would have to be somebody that's white, but also somebody that's hip, because hip-hop culture has kind of infiltrated mainstream America. I'm thinking the American singer would have to be Justin Timberlake.
I can see that.
He kind of crosses all the boundaries, you know. JT would be the American singer.
He does have that mass appeal.
Yeah.
And what would he sing? Would he sing I'm Loving It? McDonald's. I mean, that is American. You can come out in a McDonald's t-shirt and sing "I'm loving it."
Then again, I don't know. Like the last time JT was on a big stage like that, the world saw Janet Jackson's titties. So I don't know if he'd be allowed in the World Cup arena.
Not on live TV, that's for sure.
Because the one thing I know is that they have in great supply in Brazil is boobies.
Oh, yes.
And
speaking of boobies, did you see that topless model from Brazil who's waited for Ronaldo? Oh, my God. They mentioned it during the telecast yesterday. When you get a chance, she's topless and she's got these, you know, painted over her boobies. And, oh, goodness.
Hold on. What am I looking up?
Okay. Look up. Christian Ronaldo topless model. It's just, I mean, you talk about a dream come true. If I was to go on, like, create a model and come up with the type of attributes that I would like in a woman, that's what she would look like. She's getting fame for, you know, okay, apparently waiting for Cristiano Ronaldo topless.
Cristiano Ronaldo being stalked by Miss Bum Bum and a giant Donald Duck.
Donald Duck thing kind of threw me off. I'm not into that stuff, but.
Okay, so let's see. This is fascinating. Oh, my goodness.
Dibs.
So all of that is paint.
All that is paint.
The pants?
I don't think the pants are painted on. I think just the top. Because she's like a topless model. So
yeah, but
I
think the bottoms are. The bottom's not bad either.
No, the bottoms, I think, are the best part.
Miss Bum Bum.
I was like, after I saw her, I was like, she's topless?
Okay. Miss Bum Bum, who was claimed in the past to have had an affair with Ronaldo, was ejected from Portugal's recent public training session.
And isn't that ratchet? I mean, we just naturally transitioned into this, and it's as ratchet as it gets. That's awesome. Segment 4 is like taking on a life of its own.
The overwhelming theme in segment 4 is has been bums. whether that be Michelle Wee or whether that be Miss Bum Bum or.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ronaldo would have been deemed a bum had Portugal lost because he was awful in that game, aside from that last shot.
Yeah, he was hurt. He was hurt, man.
I don't know, man. I've seen him melt down too many times in the World Cup to just attribute this to injury. He's just not good in the World Cup.
Plus, he's not as good as the real Ronaldo. So there, we bring it back full circle.
I agree. Baldo Ronaldo, back on the show.
That's how we started the game. That's how we end the game. Man, oh, man. I just looked up Ronaldo. First of all, dude is 37, which, like, is ridiculous to me because, like, I always picture, like, 19, 20-year-old Ronaldo. Second of all, he's kind of chubby now, which we all get when we get older. He kind of looks like a smaller version of Rusev from the WWE. Ronaldo Luis Nazario de Lima. That's what's up, Ronaldo, man. Make your money, man. I ain't mad at you.
He's a living legend.
Yeah, he's a living, much like Miss Bum Bum's Bum Bums, he's a living legend. And that's going to do it for this week on the Kings of Sport. Before we get out of here, of course, happy birthday to Big Nasty.
Thank you, sir.
Don't get into too much trouble. And if you do, make sure that your people eliminate and get rid of the footage, because if you end up twerking at Jabbar, we will put that on the air.
Nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see that.
Nobody wants to see that.
Like, is that Big Nasty in a mountain of cougars twerking at Jabbar?
Those cougars, that cougar just broke her hip.
Oh, man. So shout out to Big Nasty for his birthday. Shout out to Brother Marcus for 2 years at Yahoo Sports. Programming note, Brother Marcus will not be joining us next week as he is on assignment. So we will, it's either going to be the two-man power trip again, or we'll have a special guest co-host. You just have to wait and see, right? Stay tuned. Shout out to our friends at Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture. Check out all the great shows, all the great articles, including my sporadic TNA Impact review, which I do probably about every other week now. Like, it's just hard to write, man. I'm not a writer. I'm good at communicating. I'm good at broadcasting. I'm just not a good writer.
It's so quiet. So just keep doing it. Keep writing. Keep reading different people. You'll get it.
Like,
you
I'm like,
I can tell.
I'm like Kevin Smith. Like, Kevin Smith used to write comics. He used to write Green Arrow. He like write these really funny comics, but they would always be like a month late because it just took him that long to sit down and write. So yeah, you'll get a TNA Impact review probably this week, including my thoughts on Slammiversary, which happened 2 weeks ago. So PlaceToBeNation.com for that. Check out the show on Stitcher. Check us out on iTunes, Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Go back in the archives if you're new to the show and this was your first time. Welcome, and you know, go back and listen to some of the shows because it'll give you a better idea of who this crazy man is that I'm talking to each and every week. And it'll give you a better appreciation for Marcus Vandenberg and the sanity that he brings to the program. So check out the archives. Let's see. I think that's it. So you can check out Marcus at Marco Will on Twitter and on Instagram. Maybe he'll put up some pictures of himself twerking after his 2-year anniversary.
Yeah, at the reception. That's
what you can see. It was just Marcus up against the wall. It was like, light skin for what? So, yeah, check Marcus out at Marco Will. Send him congratulations on his 2 years at Yahoo Sports. Big Nasty, where can the people holler at you and send you more pictures of Miss Bum Bum?
Well, send those pictures to @ThisIsNasty. Go on Bleach Report, read the articles, watch the videos, and be sure to wish me happy birthday wishes. I really appreciate those of you who have. And just real quick, my birthday is on a Monday, June 23rd, and that means Raw will fall on my birthday. A lot of crazy things have happened on June 23rd, my birthday, and a wrestling event. Austin 316, that speech was on June 23rd. Kane unmasked on my birthday. Brock Lesnar won the King of the Ring on my birthday. So, I mean, CM Punk has to come back tonight, right?
I don't think so. He's too busy. He's too busy getting people pregnant.
Uh-oh.
He's too busy dropping them pipe bombs, man.
Well, she's going to drop the pipe bomb.
With anybody else, it's an insemination. With me, it's a pipe bomb. Oh, CM Punk. Like, it's starting to get to the point where these fans that still chant for CM Punk and Raw's, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah, they're just trolling at this point. They don't think he's going to come back.
It's like, I think there's a better likelihood of America electing a second black president than CM Punk coming back before the end of the year.
Wow.
And I don't think, if anybody knows that's talked to me about this, I think it's going to be a long time before we get another black president. Long time.
What you're saying is Alan Keyes doesn't have a chance.
No, Alan Keyes, like, yeah. What was my man? The pizza man.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Herman Cain, yes. Herman Cain is 999, which wasn't only his economic plan, but how many white women he slept with that week.
<He'll be back.
laughs> I liked Herman, though. He was entertaining.
I liked him, too. He was entertaining.
So, yeah, you can check out Alfred at This Is Nasty and go on Bleacher Report and harass him. You can follow me at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at CosPod on Twitter, KOS_POD. And that is going to do it this week, man. Another show in the books.
I think we did the damn thing. Yeah. I'm going to go twerk. I got to find a wall.
Hey, get back to twerk, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. I'm going to go watch this Michelle Wee video again. And you've been down with the king.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.